Welcome to you. You're listening to the Kuiper Pass podcast. We bring you interviews with improvising musicians. Brought to you, as always, by the Kuiper Pass Cafe. Voted the number one Middle Eastern restaurant in the Twin Cities. Tonight's guest is drummer Corey Healy. He performed at the Kuiper Pass stage in trio format. Under the band name of Essence of Hair Splitter, Corey Healy on drums. Noah O.B. Cornet. And Pat Keane on double bass. I am your host, Paul Metzger, and I'm happy that you're listening. Please be aware that this podcast is available in several different formats, such as, but not limited to, Apple iTunes podcast listening something.
Apple iTunes.
Or listen online at the Kuiper Pass website. I rarely bring up the background, the backing bed of sound. But this week, I am so charmed . It's from the massive BBC sound effect file that's online, searchable, sortable. This is 50 mice. For me, it's something that inspires, something to aim for. A beautiful cacophony. I have a short excerpt of the evening's concert with Hair Splitter, and we'll follow that with the interview. Let's move into that sector. Corey Healy.
Corey Healy, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, dig. Okay, so you're someone who I've played with a few times.
Yep.
And you are a drummer exclusively, or is there other stuff you do?
Yeah, pretty much just drums. I mean, mm-hmm. I write on piano, but and I play a little bass, but I don't think I would do it publicly.
That makes me want to hear it.
So, I've been playing a little bit of bass in Eric Fratsky's group, but that's more like drone stuff, like where I'm doing kind of feedback sort of things. So, that's about the extent of my public kind of bass playing.
Okay, yeah. And I think I've caught that. That's the duo, yeah?
That's Fake that's... Accent with with Nathan
I don't
Hansen.
Know it. Don't know it.
Yeah, it's one of his new projects, so...
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, something I like to do is just kind of get a little bit into your background.
Okay.
To, like, young-ass Corey Healy, before you're, like, when you're just starting to do some kind of music stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, maybe take a minute to get to that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it all started when I was pretty much just a little kid. My dad played drums in bar bands when he was in college. And by the time I came along, he was pretty much done with all that stuff, but there was always a set of drums in the basement. So, I mean, I remember being pretty young and having him show me a rock beat or whatever and just thinking that was the coolest thing. So, started messing around, got into school band. I grew up in eastern Iowa. Rural Iowa.
Eastern Iowa.
Little town called Independence, Iowa.
Shit.
Real place.
Yeah.
America's fame is in our name. But yeah, just got into school band and...
On drum?
on drums, on percussion. Mm-hmm. Luckily, made it to the percussion section. There was kind of some competition, but mm-hmm. Yeah, and just really loved it, and started to learn how to read music, go through that whole experience. Mm-hmm. I made it to jazz band in middle school. I think it was just kind of a deal where I don't think I'd even heard jazz before, but basically the band teacher was like, "Hey, little Corey, do you want to go play drums during the lunch break?" And I was like, "Yeah, that's pretty much all I want to do." So
that you're playing kit.
That I was finally playing kit.
In band, they move you around, right? You might do the snare part or yep. some other cymbal thing.
Bass drum.
Yeah.
Yeah, suspended cymbal.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of went through all that stuff and just really, especially by the time I got to high school, just kind of dove in and started exploring all this different music. I had a band director who had this incredible CD collection, so had all of like the major Miles Davis stuff from the 50s and 60s, Coltrane, like whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
He was very cool about letting me check out music. It was mm-hmm. completely blowing my mind.
Yeah.
You know, at like 14, 15, whatever. also had a really cool older cousin who lived in Rockford, Illinois, that was passing me like mixed punk rock tapes and like Frank Zappa and all this stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, kind of got into that side of things too. But,
so where are you at in like family wise? Like, do you have siblings and shit? Or?
I'm an only child. Only child. So I suppose that, aided me in a certain way because I could just have the drums in the basement in my space and I didn't have to compete with any little siblings or anybody else. I just kind of had, you know, And yeah, I was lucky. My parents were totally supportive of me being a total, you know, nerd about all the drums and percussion stuff mm-hmm. and let me make noise and everything. So
yeah, right on.
So they were totally cool about it.
So up through high school then, and you're are you playing in high school band or jazz band or both?
Doing both. Doing marching band too.
Oh fuck.
All that.
What are you playing in marching band?
I started out doing the tenors, like the multi-tom things.
Yes.
And finally went to center snare drum, which was kind of like the cool.
Come on.
You know.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, my rudiments weren't that happening, but you know, whatever. It was fun. It was a good time. You know. So yeah, I really, as a kid, I guess I got to experience all those different things.
Yeah.
You know, the percussion side, the playing kit, having to learn bossa nova and mambo, and you know, just a blues shuffle and all these different patterns, whatever else. And
yeah.
And then also doing the marching band thing, but yeah, it was really the kit, the drum. You know, the drum set.
That's where you like to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great spot to sit.
Yeah, man. You know.
Behind the kit. Good God.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it. I mean, for so many reasons, but mm-hmm. But yeah, I was pretty
mostly
lucky.
For the carrying it and stuff. It's probably pretty
absolutely.
Great.
Mostly yeah. for schlepping.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and if you want, I like it that you know you can get hardware that doesn't weigh that much, but right. then just garbage.
Right.
So you have to get the heavy stuff.
Right.
It's brutal.
Yeah,
it is
absolutely.
A brutal instrument.
Absolutely.
But man,
and I learned that the hard way when I was a kid too, because of course, like, I had to get like the biggest, sturdiest, most solid like stands, you know, like when I was in high school.
Yeah,
and
you have to.
I even had a drum rack at one point, like one of the whole racks that
maybe
you could.
Maybe that's
like,
too far. I don't know. How is a rack? Is that for?
Yeah, just this giant hardware rack that would literally go across all the drums, and I could like clamp cymbals and tom toms and all these different things to it, and.
But that wasn't for, like, going and playing anywhere. That was just your private.
No, well, I tried to take it out a couple times, and then I learned how foolish that was.
Yeah.
And so ever since, my entire life, I've been in a constant battle with the weight of my hardware bag.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, like trying to find the lightest stuff, but also trying to find things that won't just disintegrate. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And that's a battle, man, so.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know, and I'm definitely like a drum guy. I love drums. I love vintage drums. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking at drums.
Yeah.
I play mostly small kits these days. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's really in line with the sound that I'm hearing from the drums too, but the weight is a lot better.
Yeah. You need the same stands, but maybe less bulky when you're using a smaller kick. And
absolutely.
Yeah. It was my first instrument.
Was it really?
Drums. Yeah.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize.
I've always loved, that's the thing, like when I play with other settings and shit, I'm just with the drum.
Yeah.
I just want to hear the drum.
Yeah.
It gets me jacked up.
Yeah, yeah.
And, so it's beautiful. So you come out of that scene, you graduate high school, you're all about the drum.
Yep.
And then what do you do? What are you doing?
So I went off to college for music. I went to Northern Illinois University in DeKalb, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And because they had this great percussion studio and also a really, at the time, renowned jazz program, and those were kind of the things I wanted to study.
Mm-hmm.
So, went to DeKalb and...
So at that time, freshman age, 19 or so.
Yeah.
Who are you listening to on drum? Did you have your cats?
I had my cats at that time. Tony Williams was huge for me. Mm-hmm. Also Bill Stewart. He was originally from Des Moines, so he was kind of...
That's hometown boy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That kind of blew my mind at the time, thinking like, wow, like, you know, some guy from Iowa can like go out and like play with cats. Like if you really love this stuff and pursue it, maybe, you know.
So it makes it seem you can reach it because Iowa, that's fucked up.
Yeah. There's nothing going on there, you know?
I mean, like. And it makes it interesting because for people who get that certain kind of tweak, you're always looking outside of where you are for inspiration.
Yeah.
But you found a guy
pretty close to home.
From your zone,
So
who are you liking for, were you listening to rock drummers at all, or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and, you know, my dad's favorite band was Rush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even when I was a little kid, I was listening to, like, Neil Peart and all that, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, by that time, around that age, I was mostly into, like, Sonic Youth and the Pixies. And you know, different punk bands, Husker Du, a Minnesota band. You know, so at that point I was kind of into more that realm of stuff, but also, you know, still listening to a lot of jazz and everything. And I don't know, Jack DeJohnette, you know, really, I mean, all the great guys obviously are great for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So there's so much to digest there and to get informed by. So I think I've had moments with anybody that we could, you know, mention and talk about.
Yeah.
But
I see what you're saying. That on one level, but then in another way, like on some emotional level, I think people have their cats, you know.
Yeah, like, oh yeah, of
it's
course.
It's just like,
of course.
You're talking about Tony Williams.
Yeah.
There's something that is hard to explain, I imagine.
Right.
For what
right
brings you to that cat. But
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you rolled through college, and then...
And then I landed in Chicago. NIU was about an hour outside of Chicago, maybe.
Okay.
And so by the time I was done with school, I was gigging there pretty regularly. Actually, I started doing blues. That was kind of my entry into the Chicago scene. Then just became completely enthralled with the jazz scene there, and particularly the improvised music scene.
Yeah.
Both on the South Side and kind of more in other parts of the city as well. I mean, AACM. But the kind of cats that were a little more on the North Side, like the Umbrella Music Series, you know. So kind of discovered Chicago and all that it had to offer. And so after school, that was a logical next step, so...
And you found, it sounds like you were able to step in and and start to gig and get in with, that's great.
I was pretty lucky, and mostly that was because of, you know, all these cats that I'd gone to school with, you know, who were really serious about the music too, and all moving there and everything. So it was kind of like, we were all pretty young, but we were all in it together, you know?
Right.
And there were lots of young cats at the time. Some people that are still around in Chicago and are doing really well for themselves, but there's a lot of young cats that kind of descended all at once, it felt like. And this is kind of like the mid-2000s.
All right, yeah.
You know?
All right.
And so, yeah, it was a fun place to be at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of music happening, so.
So are you, you're mostly being part of someone else's combo at that time? Like,
Yeah, I don't think I was really ready yet to, like, lead anything. I did a couple gigs as a leader, and I assembled some musicians that I really appreciated their sound and kind of picked out some material for us to play. But, yeah, mostly I was pretty much trying to be, like, a sideman, you know, just like a hired gun. And like I said, I was enthralled with, like, the improvised music scene, but I was doing wedding gigs and, you know, whatever anybody would call me for, you know, so.
I mean, just a wedding thing, that is such a dreamy spot. I only got to do it one time.
Okay, yeah.
To live out that kind of lifelong fantasy, you know, like, of, because it's so... You're so much just like with the janitorial staff,
right.
Or you know what I mean. You're just very much like, oh,
yeah,
the bus boy, you know,
yep.
Like, oh, we need a band, we need all this, the security or whatever they do,
right.
And I like that you don't get a lot of attention. You're just working. It's like, and I love doing like. The standards and just fucking doing them.
Yeah, totally.
And trying to like,
yeah,
do it, and it's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I love that kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah.
You can. I also think that's a good place to kind of get used to performing because.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really be nervous at a gig like that because no one gives a fuck.
No. You got to make it happen, you know?
Yeah. You're just playing.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, it's in this kind of fuzzy area between performance and not.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Cool. So how long in Chicago then? You're there for...
So I was there for like 4 years about.
All right.
I think I was in Illinois for 8 years total.
Mm-hmm.
So Chicago for a few years, left to get a master's degree in jazz pedagogy of all things. At a college in Iowa, the University of Northern Iowa. I went back there and was their graduate assistant, which was kind of had a teaching assistantship or whatever, which was kind of the reason. So went and did that, and that was cool, but found myself with this bright, shiny new master's degree and, like, literally no job prospects, so decided to go out to Brooklyn, New York for a year.
And this is around when, like, 2010?
This is, like, 2012, I guess.
Okay.
So, yeah, is when I was finishing the degree and moving to
New York. So you moved to Brooklyn?
I moved to Brooklyn. And
toward what end? What was attracting you to?
I had friends from Chicago who by that time had decided to try to make the East Coast leap.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of as I was saying, I mean, I had no job prospects. I didn't really have a lot of thoughts about what I wanted to do besides really kind of playing and stuff. So I was like, well, got some buddies out there. So I went out and gave it a shot. I didn't know what New York was all about. I wanted to find out for myself. I wanted to see, like, knew there was a lot of hype. I knew that there's a lot of musicians out there. Knew that it was fast paced, or so I had heard. You know, I just wanted to experience it and see what it was about. So
So
hung out there for about a year, you know, and played and met some great people. And
so where are you playing at that point? Once you're there for a minute and then you get some gigs, what kind of gigs were coming up for you?
Well, it was kind of more like kind of the improvised music thing, kind of similar to what I'm doing now here at Kuiper Pass, with some of those friends from Chicago and some new friends, and mostly around little places in Brooklyn. I mean, that was the main thing. But on the wedding gig tip, you know,
yeah.
I scored a few of those while I was out there.
Yeah, that's gotta be.
And had to lug my drums into Manhattan for some, like.
Yeah, well, fuck all that. That would must have just been awful.
But you know,
so
I got
what,
paid some
get,
bread for it, you know, so, like.
You get on the subway with a kid? Wow, that's insane. You can't do that.
I tried it one time. Luckily, the other places had some backline kits. But yeah, I tried it one time, and once again, like I said, I mean, God. I got my setup down to this, you know, basically two bags, right? Like a kick and a snare in one bag, and like hardware as light as I could. And man, that it was funny. The thing I remember, the worst part of all this was, like, I think I was getting off at, I don't know, 60th Street or I don't know where in Manhattan, somewhere up on kind of the Upper East Side.
Uh-huh.
And I'm getting off, and there's these escalators. And the funniest thing was that, like, hauling all my shit up this escalator, and there's, you know, we're just jammed with people, and there's this family in front of me, and, like, they're seriously wearing, like, NASCAR jackets and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you could tell that they were from out of town.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, look at that. And they're, like, pointing all...
Oh, they're doing that cool thing.
They're doing that cool thing. And the kids are just, like, all over my shit. Just, like, boom, boom, boom. Just, you know, knocking my bags, you know, knocking...
I'm not happy with that.
It was just...
I'm not.
The train was actually fine. It was, like, trying to get off the train and, like, get up the escalator and deal with the tourists. That was the,
wow.
That was the tricky part, dealing with, you know, some people that had maybe not experienced some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they were going through it for the first time, and I can appreciate that, and I hope they had a wonderful time, but I don't think they'd had to share space with people with drums before.
Yeah.
So
so you're out there, you did like a year in that kind of scene,
you know,
and then what, that's how you end up back here, or
and then I ended up back here, kind
I
of
I say back here, but it doesn't sound like you were ever here before.
No and you know, I guess it's kind of maybe a somewhat common story. I went out there and, you know, had saved up some money before leaving and sold a drum kit and a computer and a nice camera and all these different things. And the money was gone, you know, after a certain point. And I was working at Starbucks at the time, trying to get some health insurance and also substitute teaching at, like, charter schools all throughout the five boroughs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So... just kind of grinding, like substitute teaching, working these shifts at a coffee shop, and rent was super expensive, and just kind of wasn't sustainable after a certain point. So, I had a good friend from music school that was looking for a roommate here in the cities, had an apartment, and gave it a shot. So.
Dang. Okay.
So yeah.
And then, like, okay, so you come in here, you know a few of your Iowa cats, right? And then I know you to be playing then with George Cartwright, Adam Lintz, and other cats. I mean, how does that come around that you get to play with some of the heavier cats? And
yeah, well, I feel really, really fortunate anytime I get to play with any of those cats, yourself included.
Well, let's not drag me into it.
But no, I mean, you know, because obviously, I mean, there's just staggering musicians. You know,
yeah,
here in
I just
Twin
wonder,
Cities.
Like, if you come in, you're coming in, I mean, you're an adult and you've played a lot.
Yeah.
But how do you find your way into gigging?
Well,
in that realm?
I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting, and I guess I'll kind of, you know, drop a name. You know, I think he should be familiar, you know, to people around the city.
Is it Hitler?
It's not Hitler.
Okay.
But Luke Polipnik, guitar player.
Yeah,
from
I know that guy. I don't know him, but...
Yeah, he's originally from here in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
Before I headed out to the East Coast, Luke and I had a duo.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was originally from here, he would bring me up here for gigs. So I had actually already met Adam Lins.
Okay.
And I had met Zach Harris, you know, another guitar player here in town. So there's a few guys that were already kind of here and established that I got to sort of interact with prior to coming here. Also, you know, there's so many legendary musicians from the scene, but of course knew about, you know, Fat Kid Wednesday and JT and all those cats. So, So it was a combination of kind of knowing a couple guys, and then when I got to town, just kind of knowing who some of the cats were, and I started trying to go out to gigs and just say hi to people.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the thing, like, oh, JT's playing with, you know, some keyboard player named Brian Nichols, maybe I should go say hi to that guy or whatever, so.
All right.
You know. And, yeah, and I've just been here for a few years, and, you know.
So, yeah, that would be since, like, 5 years only, really.
Yeah, 5 years, yeah.
Huh. All right. I just assumed, like, you had just been around. I never got the feel from you, like, you were out of towner or something.
Okay.
But I guess when I caught you was when you were first around here.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because so we've already known each other for a few years, but...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the cities are a wonderful place to live for a variety of reasons, and one of the main one being that there's just such a healthy scene here, and there's just, you know, so many incredible players, you know. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, thanks to places like Khyber Pass, you know, there is community built around the scene and wanting to present, you know, original music, you know, let people actually explore the ideas that they have about music. So that's wonderful. I mean, you know.
That's what we really want to do. That's what we try to do, is make a spot.
Yep. Yeah.
And I wish there were 100 more.
Yeah.
But there aren't.
but it's still beautiful, you know, that
it's
that
a it's really, here. It's working really well as far as, like, vibe-wise.
Yeah.
So now I'll just maybe ask you, because you have your master's.
Mm-hmm.
In jazz pedagogy.
Yep. Yeah.
And what does that come, are you teaching now, or does it come up in performance or how you think about things, or
You know, it's interesting. I'm not really teaching at the moment. Mm-hmm. I've been doing some kind of web development stuff recently as mm-hmm. as kind of a gig, but I mean, It has a huge effect on, I guess, it's interesting that going through that degree and that process helped me in a variety of ways. It helped me with composition. It helped me think about trying to translate my ideas to others,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether that be through sheet music or aurally or whatever else. And I think it's helped me work with other musicians on a certain level, mm-hmm. because... you know, you're thinking about how you can translate this information to, say, like a student, like somebody who's early on in the process and who could benefit from a little more explanation or something described in a clear manner. It makes you think.
So it ramped up your communication.
I think so. I hope so.
With varying levels of person, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm not doing a lot of teaching at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'll do... the occasional clinic, the occasional I'll adjudicate at a jazz festival. Mm-hmm.
Let me know when you do that, because then I'll enter, and then you just
make
it happen for me.
Dude, you're...
I'll enter on drums.
You would know an insider, so...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And do you still play
win
drums?
Something. I mean, that's...
Is that your
house
kit?
Kid is my kit and stuff, but I don't play them.
Okay.
Like, it's not my fucking thing.
Yeah.
But I still play them now and again, and I really love it, and I'm attracted to the sound of drumming and so much about it. So mm-hmm. I'm real excited to hear you in this combo that I haven't heard before. Is it a newer grouping, or...?
We've been playing for a couple years,
mm-hmm.
And this is one of my favorite groups to play in.
Oh, big, man.
I love the trio format, just in general.
Yeah,
me too. Pretty much no matter what the genre or what the approach may be, I mean, I think that's a good number of people.
It's really perfect, just to say, because I look at it like a stool.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the minimum amount to have stability.
Yep.
And things can kind of tilt a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but you're still basically good,
mm-hmm.
you know, and excitement can happen.
Yeah,
Three. So I'll let you go set up and deal with drums. Well, did you bring your kit, or are you
going to carry it? I'm going to use your kit. I always
please do.
I love this kit. So
yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
So thanks again, and look forward to hearing you.
Cool. Thank you, Paul. This has been a pleasure. Thanks.
Solid.
Corey Healy, drummer. An interesting history and pathway. I'm your host, Paul Metzger, and it's my pleasure to facilitate these conversations and present them to you, the interested listener. And now, having attained terminus once again, it's time to disembark. I welcome you, though, to our journey's end. And hope you're able to drop in next week for another installment of the Kuiper Pass podcast.